Position number 22123, row 3.
Alan Mabry, row 3.
Yes, so having hit the water, the idea was to swim really away from the rigging, otherwise you could get dragged into it. The other thing I found, only once did we jump into a sea that was absolutely calm, and I found it very difficult to discern the surface of the water. It was very cloudy. The water was absolutely smooth, and I think what I was actually picking up was a surface layer that wasn't on the top. It was probably about 10 feet or so underneath. And that was on one occasion where I was swinging in, and my feet hit the water long before I thought it should do. But that was another problem, actually, thinking back to parachuting on just onto land, was the problem of ground rush. That if, as one tends to do when you're coming into land, the tendency was, certainly for beginners, was to actually look between the feet. And the land always seems to be closer than what it is. And you can actually do yourself some damage by stretching out with the legs to reach the earth, which isn't there. And you're completely in the wrong body posture when you do hit the earth, and you can get all sorts of problems, compacted spine injuries. And as I recall, we did have one or two of those in our SAS training, but not in the initial para course. I think one of the things was that a lot of the SAS initiates were not necessarily from the army. There were a few from the Marines, and even a couple from the Navy, believe it or not, all going in. And I think, although they may have gone through a parachute course before, their sort of landing techniques were a bit questionable. And yes, it was a lesson well learned then. Well, that, I guess, finishes most of the activities that we've done in the UK. I was formally accepted. I mean, nowadays they use the term of being badged, where you get your light berry and the badge, and you're welcomed into the regiment. That wasn't the form in those days, and those of us that were accepted were told that we were going out to be part of B Squadron, and we would fly to Singapore. Any thoughts of a nice, comfortable flight sort of went by the board. We went out. I think it was a converted Shackleton. I think it was one of the roughest, and I've flown a lot in my life, I think it was one of the roughest, shakiest flights I've ever had. And it seemed for, I don't know what its duration really was, but we took off from, forgot the name of the place now, near Oxford. Anyway, I remember landing somewhere in Germany, Egypt, Aden, Ceylon, before we got to Singapore and landed in Singapore. This was towards the end of 51. Yes, it must, because we were posted up to the regiment, but immediately released for Christmas leave, Christmas 51 leave. So we never really got integrated with the regiment until after Christmas. I was assigned to 8 Troop B Squadron. B Squadron was commanded by MacGregor, or MacGregor, yes. B Squadron OC was a very famous SAS original, a guy called Johnny Cooper. And we went to a camp that had just been occupied. The original setup had been in Kota Tinggi, I think the name of the place was, in Johor, where the Malay scouts had been quartered. And they just moved to this sort of half Malay village, half tin shed type of encampment called Sungibizi. It was about 8, 10 miles westish of Kuala Lumpur. And we really started to get integrated there. Straight away, I found problems. There were the old M Force that had gone out to form B Squadron. They were mostly the form from the originals of the SAS that had fought in the desert and through Italy, etc., and in Europe in the war. Some of them were still okay, but a lot of them had got past their sell-by date. They really were too old for working in that sort of environment. And I think the humidity and whatever, the jungle environment, got to them. And so what we found that the newcomers like ourselves were actually replacing these old originals who were being sent back to the UK.
What kind of ages were they?
They were certainly in their middle 30s, one or two even older. And a terrible environment, as I found out to my cost. Then we found that there was basically three cliques. There was the Malay Scouts that had been formed by Mike Calvert. And there's been a lot of discussion as to their real use in life. Personally, I found them just a bunch of cowboys, ill-disciplined cowboys, who, as far as they were concerned, with the B Squadron guys, you can't tell us anything whatsoever about the jungle. We know it all. There was the old clique, the old originals. Look, we can adapt into anything. Just give us time and we'll get there. So they didn't talk to each other very much. And then there's us little new boys. And nobody wanted to know us at all. We were caught between two thorns. Anyway, we went on a couple of training patrols. First of all, I went out with some Gurkhas, and because they formed, they were actually encamped with us at Sungibizi. There was a company of Gurkhas. They were led by a Captain Clark, who was so thin, and he seemed to be so supple, everybody called him Snake Hips. And he was really a good officer. And he really led the initial training. And the normal SAS way of working is in very small groups, 4, 6 people, sometimes more on special occasions. But we were divided up into sticks of 4. And the girl went out with one or two Gurkhas who would try and teach us a little bit of jungle craft. And I was always amazed by the Gurkhas because although the jungle training was training, it was in areas where there were known CT, the communist terrorists, there. So one always, it wasn't training in a benign atmosphere. It could be quite a nasty experience. But these Gurkhas could move through the jungle. They'd been there for some time, so they knew it. They could move through the jungle, and you wouldn't hear them. But when we bivvied for the night, they used to make the most atrocious noises. They used to cook themselves their curries, their fires would start up. Having been told that we couldn't wash or anything like that to go in the jungle because the jungle has its own smell and a nice, pure, clean bodies walking through it would only give the game away. There were these guys sitting down lighting fires and cooking curries, smoking cigarettes. Something which just seemed to be totally at odds with us. And was completely banned as far as we were concerned. I mean, we couldn't do anything like that. But nevertheless, it was very, very edifying to be with them. And they used to play all sorts of nasty tricks on us. We used to bivvy up for the night and have one or two guys maybe on watch. We didn't need many because if anything moved through the jungle, then the jungle would sort of light up with noise. So you generally knew there was somebody walking about, except these guys. And I remember one day just actually, I just had a pee, to be honest. And I was just straightening myself up and I felt this tap in my crutch. And I sort of looked down and there's this kukri just sort of tapping my crutch, and I looked around, and there was one of these Gurkhas. He'd come up behind me, didn't hear him, and he said, "Ah, lesson number one. You must always listen."
In English?
Oh, yes, yeah. They nearly all spoke, at least pidgin English, but most of them spoke reasonably good English. Which was another surprise, really, because the officers certainly. Cook, when he spoke to them, he always spoke to them in Gurkhali. What happened then? Oh yes, I got, as I found out, pretty well attached to a small group that liaised with the Malay police, and we had a Malay police sergeant, Newcomb, his name was, who I guess knew the jungle as good as anybody. He'd been in Malaya all the way through the Japanese occupation. He'd been with some of the CT that he was now trying to catch. He'd operated with them in sort of raids against the Japanese, trying to sort of keep the Japanese out of the jungle, which I believe they did with some skill. And our job principally was not to go out and catch or kill any of the CTs, but was to go out and look for presence, look for signs of life, whatever. Get an assessment of the size, etc., of any encampments. Then, of course, if it was small enough, if it was only one or two, then of course we did have leave then to try and kill them. Whether it was luck or what, or good fortune, I mean, I'm not being a professional soldier, I never boast about having a good war. We never actually came across any that we went into mortal combat with, but we certainly came across many, many encampments and signs of life. Some of them were quite recent, you know, you'd find sort of cooking fires that are still warm and
What was the typical encampment like?
It was sometimes they were sort of lean-to type bashes made with vines and what have you. Very, very rudimentary. We did find, when I went to the Belem Valley, because the SAS had done a big raid in the Belem Valley, which is in the north of Malaya, just under the Cameron Heights, and they cleared the valley, so-called. I don't think they actually had any firefights or anything like that. Well, we went up 3 months later to find the if the CTs had gone back in there, and indeed they had. And some of the little village kampong setups were quite sophisticated, but again they'd moved on, which was their one. They very rarely stayed in one place very long, because if they did, they'd be caught, and they knew that. I found the jungle a very peculiar place. I always remember when going out into the jungle the first time, being told, well, first of all, we'll go into primary jungle before going into secondary jungle. And I don't know why, but I thought primary jungle was going to be difficult and secondary jungle was going to be easy. But it was precisely the other way around. Primary jungle is just really trees. Secondary is where you got all the undergrowth that goes with it, all the vines, the thorn bushes. There used to be a name for these thorns. They were terrible, terrible things. Something like sitikaya, something like that. It was the sikai word for wait a minute. Because if one of these snagged your body, you stopped and took it out. Used to get terrible infections from this. The jungle was, it could be friend or foe, I suppose, depending on how you looked at it. It was a place that you could seek cover in. It was a friendly place. On the other hand, so could everybody else, and you couldn't see, I mean, you really couldn't see very far at all in secondary jungle, I mean, 10 feet at the most. And sometimes you could, it would take you half a day maybe to go 500 yards, even a day sometimes in the swamps, to go 500 yards, something like that. I mean, of course you could flounder through the jungle if you wish, but that wasn't the object. One tended to follow animal trails rather than create trails, because as soon as you created trails, it was a giveaway that you were, somebody was, some, you know, human presence was there as soon as you started cutting things down. Also, along with the Malay Sergeant Newcomb, we had a couple of Iban or Dayak trackers, and they were absolutely wonderful. I certainly wouldn't like to be on the wrong side of them, but they really did know how to work and use and live in the jungle. They could walk through parts of the jungle, and for instance, if they didn't find spiders' webs for so long, they would become suspicious that somebody had already gone in front of them. Little things like that. They could look at imprints, although you might be walking along an animal track, they could see by imprints of leaves, whether or not it was done by a human foot, certainly a clad foot, or animal. Absolutely incredible. They used to have some disgusting habits, like shooting monkeys with their blowpipes and skinning them. They used to eat the brains raw. And when we did light a fire up, they would inevitably spittle the monkey and roast it. And for the life of me, I always thought it was just like a little baby being roasted. awful impression, but good meat, I must admit. The other thing, they used to spend hours tattooing themselves. They used to be a, can't pretend to remember the name of the berry, but a, some berry that used to produce a, an ink-like fluid. And they used to sit there with a sharp and one, maybe one of these thorns, and they just used to tattoo themselves with this black juice. And hours they'd do it themselves, do it on each other. And quite happy chappies. They were forbidden after a while to collect ears. One of the things they used to be paid unofficially by the Malay police was so much for a pair of ears, and this was stopped, I think, quite ferociously when HM government back in the UK got to hear of it, and because they were natural headhunters, and they thought it was to prove they killed somebody. It was quite easy, just cut their head off, and took the head back and say, "Well, there you are, end of that Chinaman." And so I think that was even too much for some of our guys. So it was, well, don't bring the heads back, bring the ears back. But that came to an end, and it actually led to something which I don't believe any, certainly not in the SAS, they didn't like doing it. But if they killed somebody, they had to bring them back. So very often you had days of slogging through the jungle to bring a dead body back, just to demonstrate or to find out who he was, because very often people didn't know who they were, and they had to be brought back for identification.
Did you ever do that?
No. And the patrol that I was with, we rarely ever got that close to the nastier side of life. I've personally found a lot of difficulty living in the environment, and in fact I'm quite convinced eventually I would have had to stop going in the jungle. I was very prone to fungal diseases, and tinea in particular, and I used to get tinea just about everywhere, under the armpits, in the crotch, feet, legs, neck. And dried tinea was bad, but there was a wet form of tinea which was even worse. And in fact, after my first real patrol, I came back and my crutch was just a mass of tinea.
What does it look like?
It's just raw. It's just flaky, scabby appearance on the skin, but it irritates like crazy. And of course, once you start scratching it or then it develops then into the wet tinea, because it starts to weep, and then again infection, and you get all sorts of other things come in. The first time that it happened to me, I sort of came out I said, "Oh, I know where I'm going. I'm going to see the medic." So most of the guys knew what I was suffering from, so they all sort of wandered down, and most of them had knew what was coming, but I didn't. I went in to see the medic. He was a corporal. Dropped the shorts. "Ah, yes," he said, "we'll apply purple unction to that." I'd never come across purple unction before, so with a large pair of wooden tweezers and dipped some wad of cotton wool in it and liberally bathed all my crutch and rectum and everything in purple unction. And he said, "Okay, that's fine." He said, "Come back again tomorrow and we'll put some more on." I put my shorts back on. I hadn't gone about 20 yards and this terrible burning sensation came over me. And Sangibizi actually was a disused tin mine, and a couple of the areas there they was flooded from the river Bizi. So we used to use it as a bathing pool. I used it as a bath. I just dived in there to scrub everything off that I could. It was horrendous, and of course there was great gulfs of laughter all around from all the knowledgeable types. And that was a problem I had all the way through. But quite a number of people used to go down with it, and you either got it or you didn't. And I wish I'd been one of the types that hadn't. But there were many other things as well that we all used to enjoy. Mosquitoes. I've never, ever seen mosquitoes of the like that you get there. You get big fat mosquitoes, little tiny mosquitoes, even striped mosquitoes. Huge things. And in fact, I recall a comment made, I never met the guy, but many years after I left the regiment, an American called Charlie Duckworth, who started the Delta Force in America, Special Forces. He served with the SAS on an exchange for a year in Malaya. And when he first saw these mosquitoes, he said, "That's the first time I've ever seen a mosquito that could bonk a turkey without standing on tiptoe." And I think he was about right. They were enormous. And of course, the wherever you stayed still, you had to use netting over any exposed part of you. Otherwise, you'd be eaten alive. And a lot of, although we used to consume anti-malarial pills, Paliadrin, I think they were called, for all that, a number of people went down with malaria. Leeches were the other friendly little things. They used to come off of leaves, out of the water. They were so thin and small, so they could get into any area of your clothing. And you couldn't feel them, but they get their teeth into your body and suck the blood. And they were absolutely horrible. I must admit, I went absolutely spare the first time I found any. I took my shirt off at night to get into some slightly drier clothes, because every time we bivvied up for the night, we used to take our soaking wet clothes off and put damp clothes on, supposedly dry clothes, for the night, and then we'd reverse the process in the morning. But I took my shirt off, and all the way around my waistband were these leeches. And I just went spare, you know. I should have shouted and screaming, "Get them off!" But luckily, certainly the ear band, I mean, I was going to pull them off, but no, no, don't do that, you know. And Newcomb came along with a cigarette, and he sort of stuck a cigarette on the end of each one, and they just sort of, they let go and drop off. But, yeah, I've still got a few marks even today around my waistband as relics of leech infestation. And nits and things like that in general, they used to just get everywhere. Certainly it was a very popular thing to, if you were going into the jungle for any length of time, was to literally shave every hair of your body off, just to try and keep some of the infestation away. But it was very, very difficult. Especially, as I said earlier on, you just wouldn't wash for a couple of days before going into the jungle, so you could merge with it. And we did have some examples shown to us of a nice fresh body walking through the jungle, and you really could smell the cleanliness. It was different. It didn't sort of smell Knight's Castile or anything like that, but it was just different. It was fresh smell. And snakes, they were always amusing creatures. Oh, that reminds me of a little episode of prior to going into the jungle of how to kill a snake. It's quite simple, really. You just very quickly grab it by the tail,